Penguin Random House Audio presents The Hidden Order of Intimacy, Reflections on the Book of Leviticus. This is the author, Aviva Gottlieb Zornberg. Oh, the mind has mountains, cliffs of fall. Gerard Manley Hopkins. The tears of the living are themselves far from having a meaning opposite to joy. Far from being sorrowful, the tears are the expression of a keen awareness of shared life, grasped in its intimacy. It is true that this awareness is never keener than at the moment when absence suddenly replaces presence, as in death or mere separation. It is precisely the disappearance of duration and of the neutral behaviors associated with it that uncovers a ground of things that is dazzlingly bright. Georges Bataille, Theory of Religion. Let them make for me a holy place, and I shall dwell within them. Exodus 25:8. Introduction. Haunted by the Golden Calf. One day, as I was reflecting on the book of Leviticus, I had a sudden intuition regarding the pervasive presence of the Golden Calf, an image that haunts the Midrashic narratives that thread through this biblical text. In meaning and in fantasy, that catastrophic episode gives depth and resonance to the entire book of Leviticus. Later on, it occurred to me that the idea might be rooted in my own preoccupation with post-traumatic memory. Post-words, like postmodernism and post-colonialism, tend to evoke the troubling continuity of the past. Although the post-traumatic effects of the Golden Calf episode are apparently overcome, they continue to call out like unlaid ghosts. The central subject of Leviticus is the functioning of the Mishkan, the Holy Tabernacle, with its sacrifices, its pollution taboos, its priesthood, with its powers and limitations. Other subjects are covered, such as bodily impurity, leprosy, the Shemitah and the Yovel, the 7th and the 50th year of the cycle, as well as the violent narratives of Nadav and Avihu, who are burned in fire on the day of the consecration of the Mishkan, and of the blasphemer who, without obvious cause, curses the divine name. But the earlier sections of the book are focused on the question of God's presence, coming to rest in the Mishkan. This divine presence, devoutly to be wished, has its counterpart in the spectral presence of the Golden Calf. God in your midst will signify people's successful repentance for that deed, as the Midrash names it. The Mishkan will intimate full forgiveness. The Midrashic literature goes farther. The Mishkan does not merely represent forgiveness. It becomes a therapeutic device for healing the national disorder that is called the Golden Calf. Beginning with the inventory for its building, we find the recurrent theme: let the gold of the Mishkan atone for the gold they brought toward the making of the Golden Calf. The work with the materials of the Mishkan homeopathically counteracts that sin. The image becomes medicalized in some texts. Bezalel, for instance, as the chief craftsman, is credited both as a goldsmith and as a divinely inspired medical student who applies a plaster to the wound. God, as Bezalel's teacher, prides himself on his student's uncanny knowledge, his da'at. It was I who created and taught him. Here, the question of chronological order becomes interesting. The instructions for the Mishkan are first laid out in Exodus 25, and the Golden Calf narrative follows several chapters later, in chapter 32. The usual reading, the pshat, of the sequence describes the project of the tabernacle as primary, with the calf incident as an interruption in the happy narrative of revelation and divine presence. Against this straightforward reading, many midrashic sources recast the chronology. The narrative now holds profound spiritual tension. Far from being an interruption, the golden calf is the story itself. The Mishkan is the divine therapeutic response to what is, in a sense, a necessary story. Without the sin of the golden calf, there would have been no Mishkan. In reality, though not in the text, the sin must have preceded its cure. Beyond this, however, an even more radical midrashic claim returns us to the obvious chronological order of events. The instructions for the Mishkan are given first, by way of preempting the disease with the cure. In one midrash, both sequences appear in tension with each other. In the biblical text, the people first donate gold for the golden calf and then for the Mishkan, while in the Midrashic parable, the generous young man gives money to charity and then to theater, a licentious project. The sequence of sin and penitence is reversed and thus subverted. The normal structure of atonement is upended. What happens to our understanding when the virtuous act, charity, comes before the deplorable one, theater? The gold of the Mishkan comes to atone for a future act, one that has not yet been committed. Perhaps our generous young man is simply indiscriminate in his projects. How is narrative meaning to be found in this case? In what sense can the cure heal a sickness that has not yet manifested? The Midrash challenges the reader to discover more radical ways of reading. No mere episode. The book of Leviticus begins after the construction of the Mishkan is completed. It is primarily concerned with the proper functioning of the tabernacle, its rituals and taboos. Purity and impurity are the poles of its ongoing drama. It is within this text that the Midrashic tradition has detected the continuing traumatic presence of the golden calf. If the Mishkan gives the people a possibility of translating the revelation at Sinai into a different and more intimate ritual language, it also gives them the opportunity to confront the pathology of the golden calf and its implications. One of these implications is that the revelation and the golden calf are, in a strange sense, inherent in each other. On the face of it, the episode of idolatry is dealt with rather summarily. 3,000 dead, Moses' prayers, his ascents and descents of the mountain, and, it seems, that event has been brought to closure. However, an important tradition claims that the effects of this sin will remain to ferment throughout the generations. On the day when I make an accounting, pokdi, I will bring them to account, ufakadati, for their sins. Exodus 32:34. The root pakad has both ominous and vital meanings, variously referring to both death and birth. In the wake of Midrashic sources, Rashi reads, "Now I accede to your prayers not to destroy them, but always, always, when I make an accounting of their sins, then I will bring them to account for a little of this sin, together with their other sins. No punishment ever comes upon Israel that does not contain a little punishment for the sin of the golden calf." This notion that the effects of the sin, as well as its punishments, will be diffused over many generations.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?